Why don't you cram it?
Cram it where the sun don't shine?
Why don't you cram it with walnuts, buddy?
Okay.
I received a Homer Simpson quote of the day calendar.
Yeah. Yeah.
A number of years ago, and that was one of them.
Cram it with walnuts. Don't you,
it was cram it with walnuts.
The hell's the context for that?
Does it matter? It's applicable in so many applications. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
What do, Richard?
Huh? Oh, we riff. No, we talk about entertainment, TV,
usually
movies.
Usually I say this bit, but I was trying to mix it up and I threw him.
And some other stuff and whatever piques our interest. Something like that. Porn. We talk about porn too.
Not hardly at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's basically what we do. I haven't gotten any sleep this weekend, so I'm a little out of it.
I didn't either. I went to bed at about 5 a.m. playing a little too much of the Xbox there.
Well, good God, yeah. I played it on the screen you have.
100-inch screen. It's pretty sweet.
I hate you. All right, so I haven't seen any movies in the theater. You saw The Departed, though.
Yeah, I saw The Departed last night. It was, first of all, I saw it with our mutual buddy, Mark, and he, it's kind of funny. If he's tired and he falls asleep slightly through the movie, he hates the movie, and he doesn't seem to realize there's a connection. So he didn't like the movie because he couldn't understand it.
That's
but
funny.
He clearly nodded off during parts of it. It's a very complex movie, but a great movie, highly, highly entertaining. You can totally see the Hong Kong roots of the movie, and I'll confess, I actually own the original Infernal Affairs movie, and I could not get my way through it. It was so damn convoluted that I literally turned it off a half hour in. And this one was also convoluted, but you have to stick with it. But it was great. And Scorsese did a lot of really interesting things in a way. It seems like extremely accessible movie, but you know, he's still up to a lot of his old tricks. One thing I noticed in the movie that I haven't actually seen many critics comment on was, you know, he emphasized this duality a lot. A lot of the scenes, it was just like, it's Matt Damon's character, it's
Leo
DiCaprio's character, because one's a good guy playing a bad guy and one's a bad guy playing a good guy. And one thing I noticed in the movie was there's a cool soundtrack, like a lot of Scorsese movies, but all the cool songs, if you really pay attention, end up in this movie in two different places. And I was going, what the hell is he doing that for? And then I realized later, well, I guess it has something to do with the duality nature, because there was a whole bunch of other stuff in the movie that was just tied into this whole dual nature thing. And I'm not sure if that served a bigger purpose other than just an interesting flavor. But anyway, overall, the movie was well acted. It was funny in parts. It sort of in a mild way approached like what John Woo did with Face Off, which was semi unreal, but definitely a lot more real than that one. Anyway, it was great. The audience clapped at the end. I mean, it was a totally entertaining movie. So
well, I may be able to see it this afternoon, but that's
yeah, it was cool.
That's his maybe.
And on the tomato meter, I think it's like at 92, which the only wide release theater that's gotten better was Little Miss Sunshine. So it's definitely a good movie. And it's funny how Scorsese has been sort of hammered as, you know, trying to do these popular movies lately. But this is three movies in a row that are like outstanding. So I thought, and three DiCaprio movies.
It's interesting that I haven't seen a lot. Like, I haven't seen Mean Streets. Mm-hmm. I've only seen Taxi Driver once.
Yep.
Did he do?
He did Raging Bull.
He did Raging Bull.
He did Goodfellas.
I've seen that once. I didn't see whatever you just said.
Goodfellas.
Oh yeah, of course. I've seen Goodfellas.
And then he did The Age of Innocence.
They haven't seen
Bringing
it.
Out the Dead. He did a lot of movies.
I saw Bringing Out the Dead in the theater I don't know what compelled me to see it in the theater.
Yeah, I didn't like that movie very much.
Most people didn't.
Yeah.
It just had a weird vibe.
Yeah.
But I really liked Casino. That's the one of his I've seen
the most.
Movie. And it's hard for me to put my finger on why, but I enjoy that movie and whatever.
It was like the spiritual heir of Goodfellas, but it was a great movie for certain performances. Sharon Stone, it's bar none her best performance. Don Rickles, of all people, was fantastic in that movie. It was good on a lot of levels, and it felt a lot like, you know, kind of like Goodfellas did. So if people like Goodfellas, they would probably like that one. So anyway, The Departed was good. I think you will enjoy it. I enjoyed it. It gets really complex and convoluted, but it really pays off. So
cool. So what I did do this week, I watched two of your borrowed DVDs.
Oh, yeah? What'd you watch?
So yesterday, because I had to, not only did I have to work till 10:45 Friday night, I had to get up at 5 a.m. Saturday morning to go in and work a shift at the radio station.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so I got about 4.5 hours of sleep.
You work like a day shift. That's cool. That must have been
fun. I'm doing fill-in shifts now, that's cool. And so they're random. And so, you know, as is the case, when I work at the radio station, sometimes I bring my laptop and I watch DVDs in between actually working the job.
It's funny. That's how you used to plow through so many of your DVDs, was that radio gig.
Well, because I had an overnight radio gig, which, I mean, it's work, but overnights especially requires not that much participation, not that much actual effort. And what effort you do put in, it's periodic. It's like you got to spend 5 minutes doing something, thinking about what you're going to say, and then saying it. And then you got 15 minutes of
nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. So, I watched all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that way.
Yeah.
Borrowing John's DVD sets and plow them through them.
Cool.
Anyway, so I borrowed, I watched Old School. I had never seen Old School. This is the Will Ferrell, Vince Vaughn, Luke Wilson frat comedy. It was okay.
That's my reaction. I don't get why people loved it and thought it was some modern day. I mean, I liked it. They were like sort of claiming it was like some modern day Animal House. It was like a lazy, weird movie. It was not poor. It was just sort of like a series of sketches.
Well,
to me,
it would have been fine if that sort of buzz hadn't centered around it, and suddenly your expectations are higher.
Yeah.
You know, if you come into it with nothing, you're like, that was pleasantly funny.
Yeah.
A couple of weird things. One is like, it's just sort of the nature of doing a film like this, where you've got, basically they form a frat of like regular Joes.
Yep.
And so you have a couple of them, you know, you've got the big stars, then a couple speaking extras, and then the non-speaking extra members of the frat, one of whom is Nate Corddry.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Corddry.
Yeah, you're right. And Artie Lang is in it, too, from Howard Stern.
Who I wouldn't recognize.
He's like the fat guy. He was one of the guys in The Office that later joins the frat. I think Nate Corddry Rob Corddry's buddy or something.
It's weird seeing Rob Corddry there and not talking. He's an extra, and he's there, and he's in one or two shots, full
featured
frame,
extra.
Right there.
I know.
And you're just like, I know he can say something funny. When's it going to happen? And it never does. Anyway, and then your DVD here is Old School, Unrated and Out of Control. It's the unrated DVD. So I watched the DVD. I have no idea what's unrated.
Near as I could tell, it was like one of the menus had a naked chick in it.
Well, and, you know, they make a big deal on the back of the packaging here. There's this, they have this KY Jelly wrestling match.
Yeah, which
is essentially like, you know, like the scene from Stripes when there was the mud wrestling.
Yeah, it almost felt PG-13-ish. I mean, it didn't seem particularly.
And the two chicks take their tops off and they're like oily and with breasts there. And was the movie not rated R in the theater? I just assumed it was. Maybe it was PG-13, but then I just...
If it was, that would explain a lot, because there was a big move, although it's less now so, but a big move towards movies that clearly should be an R, but they cut all the stuff out to get a PG-13, specifically like Dude, Where's My Car? Dude, Where's My Car, which was not that great of a movie, but would have clearly been extremely funny had they just made an R movie. They neutered all the drug references. They neutered other stuff. If you're going to do
it. Even if they left all the R stuff in on that one, I'm not sure.
Maybe not.
I know exactly what you're saying, because in terms of Harold and Kumar, which is made by the same director, to me, that's a much funnier movie, even though it's using R-rated jokes, but...
Well, I mean, it was a drug movie, which, I mean, whether you like that or not, It's one thing to have a drug movie. It's another thing to have a drug movie where you don't even reference drugs, and that's basically what they did in the movie. And it kind of is frustrated. But
so, I'm looking at this and I'm just, what's the big deal? It's unrated and out of control. It's two women showing their breasts.
Yeah.
What movie doesn't do that these days?
Woohoo!
And not that I'm complaining, you know. One thing that was funny, you put the DVD in and the menu pops up and the menu has that scene over and over and over in the background, which I thought was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, that, I agree. I think that was, I, honest to God, I'm thinking that was their selling point for this DVD.
Anyway, so saw that, and then I watched, I just finished watching this morning, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Which, not bad. I can, I'm trying to remember why when this came out, I avoided it. Hmm. And I think I must have read a couple of snarky reviews, and it just sort of sunk in. And I can see why reviewers wouldn't like it, because it's got this very wry narrative, wink-wink through the fourth wall.
Good reviews.
And I don't know what my problem was, to tell you the truth.
But I know, I mean, a lot of it had to do with, I mean, it was, Shane Black was the screenwriter for big 80s action movies. I mean, he was huge. And he earned a crap load of money. And then he just kind of, he did some script doctor science, but he just kind of disappeared. And this was his comeback. His, like, I'm going to write one and direct a movie. And it's very well written. It's a really funny, it's
pretty well directed.
Well directed movie. And it was an interesting, you know, I really enjoyed it. They have an interesting commentary with Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. And honestly, part of the reason I avoid the movie is because I have this amazing aversion to Val Kilmer. I just think the guy's a jerk and I can't stand him. Now, that said, watching that movie and listening to the commentary soundtrack, I decide I kind of like the guy and I'm not going to hate him anymore.
Is it a good commentary?
Yeah, it's a pretty good commentary. There's some funny stuff. It's a little insiderish We're Stars kind of thing. Not talking, you know, the big stuff about We're Stars, but you know, it was interesting. There's some little things that you learn, like Val Kilmer famously has like if I remember the anecdote, was he famously had like a mole on his neck or something, and when they went back to do reshoots, they actually, he had surgically had the mole removed for some other role or something. So because of this cheap little independent movie, they realized, damn, we're either going to have to remove his mole in all the original footage or add it to all of the reshoot footage digitally. So it ended up costing this fortune because he surgically had this stupid mole removed. It was just kind of a funny little anecdote.
Can't you just use a Sharpie?
I can't remember. There was some issue with it, but anyway, they just forgot or something. But anyway, it was an entertaining, it wasn't the greatest, but it was an entertaining commentary.
All right. Well, maybe I'll skip that then. Excuse me. Anyway. So yeah, finished watching that. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
And in watching this, which, because Robert Downey Jr. is in it, and as we mentioned last week, he has been hired to play Iron Man, Tony Stark.
And keep confusing it.
You and your metal.
Metal.
I remember Jeffrey Wells saying that Robert Downey Jr. is probably going to get a nomination for Best Supporting Actor for his work in Zodiac, the Fincher film.
Yeah.
And suddenly it dawned on me that, and I don't know why I didn't think of this earlier, you know,
has he seen it? Has he seen Zodiac? Has anybody seen it?
Okay. I think a few people have. I don't think Wells has.
Is he like the detective, or is he this killer in the movie?
I don't remember. So Downey Jr. did good work there. So people, I mean, usually that sort of thing, before a movie's been released, a lot of the executives here buzz like, oh, Robert Downey Jr. did great work here. Maybe we should plug him into something. And you wouldn't naturally think of him as Iron Man, but on the other hand, he's also got to be fairly cheap.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that didn't, when we're trying to figure out why would you cast Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man when it's a bit of a reach, he's clearly not going to hold the studio over a barrel for back end points or anything. Well, he's got to be a fairly inexpensive choice for that.
That's sad, but the way movies, if you make a movie, basically you have to sign a completion bond, and these companies that do this make you go through a million hoops, so there's little chance he's not going to finish the movie and do it well because of his problems. So you're just saying he's cheap because of his problems, or cheap because...
No, cheap because he's not a huge,
he's not a
name.
Huge actor.
He's not as big,
and
like, if Tom Cruise had actually been a, you know, prior to the Scientology meltdown, if Tom Cruise had been in this, then it's a much more expensive film.
That's
because
true.
Of his participation.
That's true. People...
And if you look at you know, a big name actor, even though it seems like the trend now is that studios are really holding the line against the big payouts,
yeah,
they're clearly not paying Robert Downey Jr. as much as they would have to if it was a bigger name actor, and I'm sure that that's part of it.
You know, that's a very good point.
Why I didn't think of that last week.
Because Downey Jr., though he's very well known and he's loved as a great actor in the industry, he has I can't think of a single really big movie he's been in, so that's a good point. He's sort of like Johnny Depp was like 6 years ago. So, anyway.
There was a little blurb that came across the internets.
Yeah, that, the series of tubes that delivers tubes. Information to you.
You know, it's the fault of the Democrats that the tubes aren't bigger to allow more fondling of 16-year-olds by congressmen.
Male congressmen. Male 16-year-olds.
So anyway, this quote came through that Joss Whedon had said, there will uncategorically no more Serenity sequels, just stop thinking about it.
Really?
Yes. And then later that week, there was a rebuttal quote from Joss Whedon saying, I don't know how this stuff gets started.
Wow.
It's this whole funny, you know, 5-paragraph response basically saying, I turned my neck, turned my back on the internet for 5 minutes, which is how long it takes for you to appreciate my back. And this is what happens. And basically he was saying, that is not the case, and that if a studio asks him to make sequels, he will undoubtedly make sequels.
Yeah, he's probably saying it's sort of out of his hand and to some extent.
He just, at this point, has not been asked.
Yeah.
And there was an accompanying fact with the first quote that said that Serenity had yet to make its money back, and as I recall, that is not the case. It has made its money back. Mm. Not a lot, but it covered its budget.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird.
How did that thing do on DVD?
I thought it did pretty well. I haven't checked up on it.
And how did that thing do internationally? I haven't looked at that either. I just
wondered. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, there hasn't been anything new hopping down. And Joss Whedon has said, you know, he loves the universes he has created and he loves to play in them. And he says it's a balancing act between returning to pre-existing areas and playing in those and then creating new stuff.
What's he working on right now?
Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And so, and he said, you know, he's written comics for, he read a Serenity comic, a few issues of a 3-issue limited series.
Yep.
And he said, any medium I can to tell stories in these areas, I will explore. So anyway, it's just, I went from being a little depressed to not being depressed about it, because I love Firefly and Serenity.
Hmm.
Did you see this bit that someone did a study, which of course I don't have to cite,
yep,
that The Daily Show has essentially the same substantive news content as
actual
news shows?
Slightly more. And it was a study. It was like, I think it was slightly more. There was these two researchers, at a college, and they basically compared the news content during some very specific weeks, basically run up to election and other things. And they were saying that the amount of news content coming out of that was actually slightly more mostly because they were able to go longer on a story. And to me, it doesn't surprise me at all. And I still don't get why people bemoan what's going on with the Daily Show. To me,
bemoan? What are you talking about?
People, if you look at news critics, it drives them nuts that people actually say they get their news from the Daily Show.
Well,
it kills them.
And for the longest time, it wasn't just that. The line was that people got their news from the late night shows,
yeah.
Letterman and Leno, and
yeah.
Well,
I can tell you specifically, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, I get news from tons of sources.
But anyway, I say that, and that lately that line has shifted from the late night shows, more specifically to
the Daily Show and Colbert. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I it's funny. I haven't heard. I think it came out, but you know, where Stewart hasn't made all the comment on it yet, or I didn't see him talk about it on the Daily Show.
They tend not to be that self-referential.
I don't know. When they do something big, well, it's when somebody attacks them, they'll start going about
That's true. And like Bill O'Reilly says, oh yeah, they do okay. Those little comedians there. That's true.
But anyway, it doesn't surprise me at all. Well, I don't understand why it drives some people so nuts to think that actual information
could
be conveyed in a comedy show.
Because actual reporters and news people are incredibly self-important.
Yeah.
They're incredibly, oh, we're suffering reporters bringing the truth to the people, regardless of the fact that rarely do they actually do that.
Yeah.
A lot of news these days, and I've been on the periphery of this. I've seen what happens. the newspapers are the ones driving most of the original reporting,
yep.
and that everyone else sort of picks up on that. Like, it was reported today in whatever paper, the Times or such and such, and then the TV report expands on that and goes and interviews someone based on a story appearing in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Now, clearly that's not 100% the case, but I've seen it, and a lot of times that's the case.
Well, who...
And a lot of people, especially in local news, and because I've never dealt with anyone at one of the national news organizations, but local news people, incredibly self-important, incredibly, oh my God, we're making news, and
yep.
it's...
We're going to investigate local gas and so, prices.
And so for the fact that The Daily Show, a bunch of idiot comedians, is getting all this credit for informing people, I can understand why that drives them nuts and why they'd want to take any opportunity to denigrate them.
Well, somebody was talking this week about, I think maybe it was Frank Rich or somebody, and they were talking about The Daily Show, and they're saying, God, it performs an incredible service because of what the mainstream media is not doing. And in other words...
In terms of questioning...
Exactly. So, well, somebody will say something like Dick Cheney or some politician, and they're obviously going a lot against Republicans. And I'm one of the people that believes if the Democrats are in power, they'd probably be going against them pretty clearly, too, even though it's clearly a more liberal show. But anyway, so you'll see a politician make a statement. And then a reporter will ask him something. The guy will say, I never said that. And then they'll just move on.
Right.
As if that's not their job to actually go, wait, did he actually do that? And The Daily Show is the one place that pulls out those quotes and makes fun of them.
You're exactly right.
So, and I'm thinking that's like, it's funny and I'm entertained, but it doesn't get around the fact that it's legitimate, a newsworthy thing that they're doing there. And well, nobody else is doing it.
And to me, the one that sticks out in my mind so clearly is the one where the Cheney's saying it's been pretty well confirmed that Abu whatever met that the Iraqi intelligence guy met with the one Al-Qaeda operative in Prague. Remember that meeting?
Yep.
It's been pretty well confirmed. And then later, I never said that. And The Daily Show plays the two clips back to back.
Yep.
And so clearly caught him in a lie that nobody else was doing.
Yep.
Nobody else was holding his feet to the fire. And you're exactly right. And a lot of it is because the reporters don't want to be denied access. And if they hold Cheney's feet to the fire and say, here's an inconsistency. Here's something you said here. Here's where you countermanded what you said here. Can you please explain that? Then I think the reaction is going to be, well, that reporter's a troublemaker. We're not going to give them access. They're not going to be able to interview anyone anymore. They can't get into briefings. They're shut off.
Yeah.
I think more than anything, that is what they fear. And so they don't hold anyone's feet to the fire. The Daily Show has no access. They're using all this through publicly available clips. They have nothing to lose, basically. And so they suddenly become the de facto voice of the actual news.
Yeah, no, I totally
And it's got to be tremendous pressure on their writers to know that, oh, my God, people are getting news from us.
Yeah.
And say, where's... We don't want to mess with our success in terms of making it funny and ripping on people.
If they're really smart, they would never think that. They'd never go, I better do a good job on this because I don't want to get it wrong.
You're exactly right, but it's got to be in the back of their heads.
Oh, totally.
It has to be.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally.
And it really is becoming like everybody, almost everyone in my circle of friends, total Daily Show and Colbert watchers.
Yeah.
Not 100% of the time, but like 90% of the time, people will go, hey, did you see this thing last night?
Yeah.
Or wasn't that a funny line?
It's a water cooler conversation for a very specific subset. Because it really doesn't have it doesn't have an enormous audience. It's a big audience. I think it's like 1.5 million people.
Well, it's still Comedy Central's. I don't know if South Park outrates it, but it's like the number one
show.
No,
I agree. But in terms of the context of other shows, which... Well, not like a CSI, which gets like 15 to 20 million people. But in terms of even news, it only gets it gets about 10% of what all the other news.
But of course, it's the right demographic.
Exactly. And it's unbelievably influential among the people that matters.
Which is how they get so many guests of consequence on this show.
Exactly.
Excuse me. The point of that study, which is that there's actually news content. And it's true. I've never heard anyone that's been confused about when are they reporting a fact and when are they making fun of it. Nobody's ever been confused about that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, moving along.
Oh, I forgot to mention, you know, I was talking about when I saw The Departed, I saw a trailer for the 300, and I was asking you,
just 300.
Yeah, for 300. Sorry, that for and I was asking you, is that different than that thing we saw a couple weeks ago? When you were saying that was like a Show West preview trailer.
That, I was using that as an example. Yeah. I don't think it's a Show West thing. It was a it was like a demo.
Yeah.
You know how that happens? It's not a trailer, but it's like a nigh trailer, almost trailer.
Yep. Well, let me tell you, the trailer I saw last night kicked friggin' ass. It was really good. And it was, and I think specifically it was good because they didn't have a lot of the talking, which watching that thing we saw threw me. It didn't seem really natural. And I'd be willing to bet if I sat through the movie, I would get into that talking more. But the trailer was pretty much all action and it looked fantastic. It really, really looked great. And I don't think they spent that much money on this movie, isn't it? It's pretty low budget.
It's a green screen movie.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, it does not look that way. I leaned over to my buddy and I said, dude, I think that whole movie is pretty much done in a studio on green screen. And he couldn't believe it. I mean, it looked dark and it looked like a movie you could make with green screen. But I'm telling you, it played really well in that theater. You could hear a buzz in the theater when they saw that thing.
What other trailers did you see?
I honestly don't remember.
I can't blame you. I hardly don't even remember stick them either. In. And it's interesting at this point, because I love trailers. I used to love trailers. And I remember it was a big deal in the Bay Area, at least in the Silicon Valley where I grew up. Most of the theaters, the custom was three trailers.
Yeah.
Three movie trailers, maybe a Coke commercial or something, and then the movie. Then I move up here, the custom is five trailers.
Yeah.
And I was, oh, that's awesome.
See, I love trailers. It was 15 minutes, so it was exactly that.
I love trailers. But nowadays with
yeah,
like half the time I've seen the trailer already on the internet,
yeah,
or I know what it is instantly because I'm so plugged into the movie world and okay, this is that movie, or I've never seen, you know, it's rare that a trailer comes across that I know nothing about, haven't heard of, and then like. So it's a deal than it used to be.
They did have that Will Ferrell movie with him and Emma Thompson where he plays a character in her novel.
Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah, it doesn't look great. I mean, people are kind of laughing, but I've heard a lot of weird buzz about there's a central conceit in the movie that they never really resolved, kind of like with the Stepford Wives. And I don't know, it doesn't look that great. But other than that, there wasn't much, nothing sticking out. I was hoping they would show the Borat trailer, which I actually downloaded on my Xbox 360. And I hadn't seen the actual trailer before. And it's funny.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at that going, God dang, I hope this is the biggest dang thing ever. And I'm getting this sense that, I don't know, I'm just getting the sense that it is going to play very well. You know what's funny is I used to watch all those Ali G shows. And if you had said, they're going to make a movie out of one of these characters and it's the breakout star between Ali G, Bruno, and Borat, I would have not said Borat was the lead character. But he's clearly, it's just incredible. The movie, the preview looks just hilarious. Anyway.
So you sent me an article that the ratings for Studio 60 have been dropping.
Yeah, holy.
Three episodes so far.
Normally I'm totally tuned into ratings and I just assumed the thing's doing great. That freaked me out reading that.
Yeah, and it honestly, there was like three weird pieces of news that day, and it really put me in a funk.
Oh.
Because I like the show a lot. I don't know if I'm, well, I
well, you'll get there. It, you'll get no, there, no. But you absolutely don't want it to die.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's the show I want to go for a while.
Exactly.
And it's upsetting to learn that the ratings are slipping, and you hope that NBC gives it time. Get the audience, because then I think the next day was word that Kidnapped had been canceled already.
Yeah.
Not that I'd seen it or could give a rip about that show, but God, it's so.
Yeah, there's a couple shows that are kidnapped after two, or kidnapped. They were killed after two episodes, and it's like, well, that's
especially
just
last
for the
season. Those at Head Cases with what's his name? The Hebrew Hammer.
Oh yeah, Adam Goldberg. The Hebrew Hammer.
That got, I mean, that didn't look that great, but that got canned. But yeah, there've been a couple of shows that two episodes and you're done.
Yeah.
And just, my God, how can you, I mean, I understand if the ratings stink, but you know, if something like According to Jim or Two and a Half Men is going to be on forever.
Is According to Jim? I thought that was like an ABC show. I saw it on Fox.
Maybe
it was a rerun.
I couldn't tell you what network. I think it's in syndication now.
Oh, okay. So it's
how depressing is that?
Well, it is. It's not depressing for Jim.
Speaking as someone who's never seen an episode of According to Jim, I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's not depressing for Jim Belushi's pocketbook, but other than that, it's depressing for the rest of the world. But it looked like it was like a Fox, like a primetime thing, and I wondered if they had picked up the series or something, but I hadn't heard.
Of course, the goal of every series is syndication, because that's when money really starts kicking
in. Well, it's
funny,
it used to be 100 episodes, and then they figured out, well, in some series, they go into syndication after like two seasons. So depending on what it is, this kind of weird version of syndication, meaning they're not really syndicating, but they're selling it to Lifetime or some other weird network. But yeah, the Gold Standard is still 100 episodes.
So, God, I think the show is really good, and I think it's going to continue to get better. And I'm invested in it. I want to see what happens. And just the fact.
Yeah, that's depressing.
It's a bit of a weird, 10 o'clock's a weird time slot, though.
I know. I keep thinking it should be at 9.
I watched the first one live because I was, oh, my God, new Aaron Sorkin. Ah! But the other two, I let my box record them, and then I watch them the next day because I try not, I don't like to stay up late. I get up early to go to work.
Yeah, I agree.
So I wonder if that's it, if it's the 10 o'clock slot that's contributing to the trouble.
Yeah. That could be. I mean, it's just it's crazy why wouldn't people be watching? Why would it be dropping off? I mean, there's nothing. When I saw the first one, it said, well, I'm definitely going to see the next one.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why somebody would watch first one and go, nah, not for me. That just seems weird to me. But
I actually saw 3 minutes of Saturday Night Live last night.
Yeah.
My wife turned it on. We're going to bed. And it was Jamie Presley was hosting, who is Joy from My Name is Earl.
Yep.
And it was towards the end of the show, and I saw the end of one sketch where they were basically NASCAR cheerleaders.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it was funny because I was too busy staring at the hot chicks in these incredibly skin-tight, they're skin-tight costumes.
Yeah, I hear you.
That was good looking. And then the next sketch.
I'll have to check that out on YouTube.
The next sketch. And I'm in bed reading. It's like on in the background, and it's a sketch called Big Wigs. And it's three guys in an office, and oh, the number, we got to make these numbers work, and oh, the corporate is sending in the big wigs, and oh yeah, here come the big wigs. And you can already tell, you know what's going to happen.
They're not going to come in with big giant wigs, are they?
Why, yes, they are. They did, and
like something from like one of those old Nickelodeon sketch shows, like.
Yeah.
The Amanda Show or something.
And they come in, they've got giant wigs, and there's a ceiling fan, and oh my God, are they gonna, and then at the end there's a ceiling fan, and there's hair everywhere, and tune in next week when they send in the ball breakers. And they come in with bats, and you're like,
that was their joke.
It's nothing new. The end sketches in SNL have always sucked it up.
Wayne's World.
Sucked out loud. And it's a couple things going on. One is, the end sketches have always stunk. Another thing is, it's got to be hard to come up with new material every week. So
I
don't want to say that I could do anything better.
Even what you get a little bit of feel for watching Studio 60, but it's got to be hard to be a writer and to put that stuff out. It's like people just go, oh, this wasn't funny. This sucked. I'm going, I agree, but man, that's got to be really hard to do.
And then that's the other thing that goes through my head is from the premiere of Studio 60 of the Peripheral Vision Man.
Yeah.
And it's like, are they going to cut the funny sketch? What are they putting in its place? Peripheral Vision Man. Oh, well, it needs to fill 4 minutes. How long is the sketch? 3:30. Oh, good, because making that one funnier making it longer is what's keeping it from being funny.
Yeah.
You can tell that that's exactly what's going on. It's this thing that's not funny that they don't know what to do with, but they have nothing else to fill with. And so anyway, it was just kind of weird to see that going on and going, yep. And then turning it off and saying, I'm not missing anything by not watching that show. Okay. So what else was going on? Did you see The Office this week?
I don't know.
Dwight.
No, I haven't got to that. I'm sort of catching up on it with iTunes. So I saw the one where they went to the convention, which is funny.
I have to ruin a joke for you, okay. And I'm sorry.
Okay.
There's this scene where there's drama between Dwight the suck up, mm-hmm. and Steve Carell's character, the boss. And towards the end of the episode, where there's Dwight's groveling for his life.
Yep.
And Steve Carell says, as his resolution, "Hug it out, bitch." And I didn't really understand what was said, but I didn't want to go back and listen to it again. And actually what he said was, "Hug it out, comma, bitch."
Yep.
And then they hug and it's over. And later Steve Carell's explaining to the camera, you know, it's a guy thing where, you know, you hug it out and it doesn't translate well to women. And my wife turns to me and she's like, "Do men say that to each other?" I said, "No." And what I should have said was, "Well, they do now," because the next day as I'm chatting with my friends, like, it was like every fifth comment, "Hug it out, bitch."
Oh,
it's now part of the temporary lexicon. I don't know if it'll have legs, but it's funny how this one comment can suddenly permeate, and it's, you're right, it's water cooler.
Oh my God.
And it's such an absurd thing, and it's brilliant writing, because suddenly it becomes what it was purported to be.
Oh my God. Hug it out, bitch.
And God, watching NBC now, it's like suddenly...
It's the good network again.
No, I was going to say Deal or No Deal.
Oh yeah, except for that crap.
Oh my God.
It's so weird. They're going down the same path, you know. It depending on the night they put it on, it gets huge ratings, and it's like, so what do? They'll put it on three nights. And first of all, I hate that stuff. But second of all, do they not remember what happened to the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire
exactly.
thing?
And I've seen an article or two where they're saying, "Well, we don't want to do what they did." It's like, really?
But that's what you're doing it. If they're smart, they'll put it on for 2 months at a time or a month and a half, pull it off. Bring it on, put it on. I mean, if they're smart, they would dole it out.
I have never watched one of these late night or primetime game shows. Aside from, like, you know, watching Jeopardy back in the day, which is not really the same thing.
Yep.
But Who Wants to Be a Billionaire, never watched it.
Yep.
Deal or No Deal, which suddenly just all this insane media buzz this year about it, or this season. And I'm like, what? Huh?
Yeah.
Howie Mandel? What?
It is weird to see Howie Mandel bald and doing this little thing.
And sort of talking, what's the appeal? Okay, well, it's hot chicks and it's money. It's like, oh, well, maybe if the hot chicks were like holding some sort of dessert item, you're hitting all of the American stereotypes and you get everybody. But well, I have no desire to watch
it. I'll confess, I watched, I think it was the lead up to the first Studio 60. So I'm watching, because somehow in my head it was going to be on at 9. Like we said, so Deal or No Deal, it was a 2 hour Deal or No Deal. So I found myself watching the second hour of it, and you can see how it's kind of compelling, but it gets old very quickly. But you can see it's kind of compelling. These people, are they going to pick this? I mean, it's the stupidest concept. There's like 40 briefcases, and depending on what money they have, I mean, it's dumb, but it is compelling for a little bit of time. And what I really couldn't stand about that is the one thing about this game show, unlike other ones, is they clearly hand select their contestants for a variety of reasons. Either this contestant has this backstory or this person's particularly voluble, and they encourage them. So they had this one dad who was running around, jumping around, talking about booyah, saying, "I'm going to go up and hug that lady." And it was annoying. It was like the worst reality show contestants.
Well, I have nothing against people that watch it, but it's not me.
Yeah.
And they're pimping it like it's the next Seinfeld, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty painful.
And it's just, and you know it's going to follow the exact same path as Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
And it'll be yet another object lesson in a couple of years that no one will have learned their lesson from.
Hey, wasn't the premiere of Lost last week?
Yes, it was.
So how'd that go?
I enjoyed it.
I missed the entire last season.
You know, they continue with their formula of answering some questions while presenting others.
So what's an answer they gave you?
Well, they showed...
Those friggin' numbers mean?
No.
That's like coordinates or...
How the others were existing on the island when the plane crashed. And basically, it was like they were in a... Like a bungalow resort. They were all living in houses that were sort of a little like bungalow houses, like resort bungalow houses. And they were all... You know, they had CDs, they were dressed in normal clothes. Then the plane crashes and the leader says, "You go to that section of the island, you go there, infiltrate." And so you don't really know what the motivation is, but you see a little more behind the scenes of the others.
They bring in any new characters?
Yeah, they brought in a new other. Her name is Juliet.
She hot?
She's not bad.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it continues to be compelling for me.
Yep.
So
I liked it the first season, then I just stopped watching, and I just sort of one of those shows where, damn, I didn't watch, and I didn't really want to make the commitment to try and catch myself up on it, so I stopped watching. But I did like it.
Yep. So last night I go over to my friend's house. He has purchased the exact model of HD TV I want.
Yeah.
Down to the size. I mean, everything. That's the TV I would buy were I to buy one today.
Yep.
There's a couple things sort of surrounding his experience. One, he's calling around to Best Buys in the area, and nobody would answer the phone at one in the TV department. So they lost a sale.
Yep.
When he was talking to the guy at the store he bought it from, and he said, you know, hold it, I'm going to pick it up tonight. He got the impression that Best Buy was going to try and get away from actually stocking the TVs, which, why? Generally speaking, if you want a TV, you're coveting. You want it now. You don't want to wait for it to be delivered from the warehouse.
Yeah.
So I think that's a dumb move.
Hmm.
And of course, then you're dealing with the people, be it Best Buy or Circuit City, wherever, that are generally idiots.
Yeah.
And that don't really, you know, they know a little bit. Because he has a TiVo, and there was some question over whether or not he could get HD programming through the TiVo. And the way they had the signage set up at Best Buy was confusing. And so he thought he could get an HD signal through his TiVo, but he couldn't.
So he
was pissed. So he had to go get a Comcast box.
Yeah.
And so there's jumping through those hoops. And then he gets it home and sets it up. And it takes him a while to figure out why the signal is so bad. And he realizes that the cable box is outputting the signal at 1080i, which is standard
definition.
Yeah,
you can adjust the cable box. They don't make
and
it
so,
easy.
And he's smart enough to figure that out. And so he gets... Yeah. It's, by the time I get there that night, it's pretty much dialed in. He hasn't calibrated the picture yet, but he's got it all dialed in. And he knows the difference between the aspect ratios and how to set all that up. But it got me thinking, how many people are getting these TVs home, but they're not smart enough, or they can't, not that they're smart, but they're not technically inclined enough to realize that the cable box has to be set specifically to, and then what's the difference between 1080i and 720p and, or 720.
Well, it's funny, most of the people getting that stuff now, my sense is, they are technically savvy because we're the first generation. It's the second one.
No, I think more because I go into Best Buy and I'll drool.
Yeah.
You know, I'll window shop for a while or I'll kill time, whatever. And I'll see normal people asking HD questions and listening to, you know, and so the clerk becomes their repository of HD knowledge. And, you know, I'm sure some of them do a good job of explaining it, but I think more and more, there are normal people buying HD TVs that wouldn't know to check that setting on the cable box, and they get home and they're frustrated.
Well,
and it's not.
What's interesting is that these Best Buy, Circuit City, these companies have really figured out one of the biggest ways for them to make money is these outside services. So you notice when they sell TVs, they have
Geek
a big
squad,
thing in there.
Bull Honky.
The Geek Squad, they have their We'll Set It Up service. Every one of these TVs, when they set up a HD, there's somebody offering them to, we'll have somebody out for $189.
Oh, it's
got to
be more than that. Yeah. So, but
exactly.
Yeah. You're right. But it's just, it strikes me as things have to get easier before HD really achieves insane numbers.
Yeah.
Before HD becomes, I mean, it's the new thing and everybody wants it. If you're buying a TV today, why wouldn't you buy an HD?
Well,
but it's still, it's very complicated to get it set up correctly.
And that's the thing. And it's fraught with potential pitfalls you may not realize. The example being, I spent the past week kind of monkeying around with my setup because I'm installing wires through my ceiling and stuff. And I realized very early on, my mom gave me her old, and it's only like 3 years old, but her old surround stereo receiver, beautiful, nice Sony receiver, or Techniques, I mean, works really well. But, and it has inputs where you put in the video and you put out the video. And I knew going in that it can't take a component signal. It can only take in a standard signal and spit out a standard signal.
I've never done my video through my audio receiver.
Well, the only reason to do it is just for ease of control of your thing, because otherwise you have to have multiple units. Like if, like,
well, the other benefit is ports. If you, if it's a new receiver, it might have multiple like HDMI ports, and well, then you only have to deal with one out to the TV.
So you'll notice with my, I'm showing Matt my, I have my, my video projector mounted to my ceiling, and I have two sets of component outputs going out of that thing. And even that kind of isn't enough. But one is going to have the TV signal and one has the Xbox and Xbox signal. So basically I'm going to have to flip it for two. Well, if I had like even another video thing in there, then it just simply wouldn't work. I couldn't do it. Well, I think a lot of people, if their old TV just worked that way and you're getting a new one and they're going, wait, you mean to tell me I have this video projector, but I have to have another wire going to it? I mean, I imagine there's a lot of people having weird conversations, finding out that their existing setup, which they spent a lot of money for, just doesn't quite work for this. So,
yeah. And, you know, suddenly you're looking at, I have to spend how much to get a switcher?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's, I think things will need to become easier for normal people to, I don't know. So there's that, you know, and, you know, my friend is smart enough to know that the Xbox signal is going to look best on a 720p system.
Yep.
Because you can set the Xbox to spit out a 1080i.
Yep.
But it's really going to look best progressive because video games look better progressive.
Yep.
He knows that.
Yep.
You know, Joe Bob, who, you know, maybe buys an Xbox, necessarily wouldn't know that. And, you know, the difference really isn't, maybe people can't even tell the difference.
Geez, I played my Xbox, that Project Gotham Racing, for about 3 days before it finally realized that it actually wasn't in HD, because I knew it spit it out and I knew it said you have a receiver, yeah, but yeah, I had to go in there, and then I did, and it's like, oh wow, that's a lot better. I just didn't realize it. And so, by the way, I bought Doom, the original Doom, Halo 2, just to see the thing, and boy, the Xbox 360 is a lot better, because that, it really looks, it looks old school. Even though that was like as great as it got with the Xbox, it doesn't look that great, which I was surprised to find out. I thought it wouldn't be that big of a difference, and it's like, no, that's like way, way worse. So, but I'm looking forward to playing through it, because I just decided I could not wait another year for it to come out on PC, for God's sakes.
So you have a couple new DVDs. Inside Man.
Oh yeah, I got an Inside Man and
Chronicus.
Oh, that's some John Leguizamo Spanish movie that,
and I can't read what really that good. Purple is. That Purple Rain or
it's a purple box. Oh no, it's called Zeus and Zoe. You know me, I like weird foreign movies. So it's an Amsterdam movie that was nominated for best foreign language movie about 4 years ago. So but Inside Man was cool because it's a great movie, and I watched it again and liked it even more, and listened to the commentary, and I got it for the commentary track, and God dang, I really like Spike Lee. I used to not like him, but he was cool in that.
Yeah,
a cool dude, and really interesting commentary. And there's a lot of little stuff that I didn't realize. I mean, we all knew that there was going to be thematic elements similar to Dog Day Afternoon, but he specifically found the two living actors that were in that movie that were hostages and made them hostages in this movie. I thought that was cool. And a lot of other things. I really, really enjoyed the commentary track. A lot of little things about how the guy delivering pizza, it was from Sal's Famous Pizzeria, which I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, I've noticed.
And if I had seen the words, I would have known right away that was a Do the Right Thing allusion. And anyway, I ended up just loving the guy in a way that I was always hit and miss with him, mostly because some of his movies I just hate and they feel smug. But then I realized later, you know, the dude's an auteur. He's put out a lot of movies. You gotta look at the totality of his career, and he's put out some really good movies. And this is one of them. So
there was, I think it was on Family Guy, there was a joke about like Peter was feeling persecuted, so he starts yelling, "Gattaca, Gattaca, Gattaca." I love that because it's such a specific joke that not that many people get, I'm sure.
So it's a reference to Attica, but he's making a joke.
But he's screwing it up because he's an idiot, and he's saying Gattaca.
That is funny.
Which is a movie, it's an Under the Wire movie.
I liked Gattaca.
Oh, I liked it too. So, I thought it was very well done.
Who directed that movie? And it was like,
Remember who directed it.
I remember the name vaguely. But anyway, so, one other thing about Inside Man was just cool. He's talking about the finance of the movie. He was saying, and he's exactly right. He said, it is basically... He got onto this movie, but the way it got made was him basically talking stars into being in this movie, which is his buddy Denzel and others. And clearly they didn't get paid that much because he apparently delivered the whole movie for $50 million. And as he pointed out, the whole movie is filmed right there on location in New York. What I didn't realize was in actuality, a bunch of that bank scene was actually, it's a real bank right there off of Wall Street. And I remember looking at it going, oh, this is a fake bank. Because how many banks do you see where they have stairs that you walk up into? Uh-huh. And it's like, no, that's a real bank. But he delivered the whole thing for $50 million, which is a testament to him and his ability to get talent and other stuff. Because that easily could have been a $150 million movie.
No, you're entirely right. And I hadn't even... It ties into... There was something I was going to bring up from the Studio 60 premiere, where for no reason at all... Bradley Whitford starts railing against shooting in Vancouver.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Vancouver, Vancouver doesn't even look like Vancouver. It's Boston, California. And it was like 30 seconds of ranting against it. And just like,
that
wow.
That was cool and insight. I liked that.
There's this backlash against shooting in Vancouver, which is completely understandable. And one of the things about Serenity was it was shot in L.A.
Yep.
And that was a Joss Whedon insisted. It's like, I'm going to shoot it in L.A. because, look, I can get this awesome cinematographer, a director of photography, if we shoot it in L.A.
Yeah.
And we do this, this, and this, it's going to look awesome. Spike Lee shoots in New York, and it looks awesome. It doesn't look... I love it when people do that.
Yeah.
God, what was that? UC Undercover on NBC a couple years ago.
Oh, I remember that.
Lasted about 5 minutes, but John and I watched it because it was supposed to be, it was one of those set in Seattle shows, which always means a 2-minute aerial helicopter shot of the Space Needle and then Vancouver.
Grey's Anatomy. And the Jessica Alba thing?
Dark Angel.
Dark Angel.
That was post-apocalyptic.
Post-apocalyptic Seattle.
So I remember watching the first episode of UC Undercover. There was like a car chase taking place on I-90. There was a helicopter shot pullback of like the Mount Baker Tunnel. And okay, well, there's I-90. And then like the rest of it's Vancouver.
Yeah.
Or God, what was the other one? With Dominic Purcell. He played sort of the guy with no memory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember. I know what you're talking about, though.
But another set in Seattle, but shot in Vancouver.
Like not Alias or John Doe or something. But
John Doe?
I don't know.
That was his name, John Doe.
I can't remember the name.
Title of the show.
I watched like one of the shows.
I'm sure the rest of the country really doesn't care, but it certainly drives people from Seattle bonkers because we're like, that's Vancouver. That's
Seattle,
nothing in Seattle looks
Seattle's
like that.
Seattle's that weird city that because it's kind of a second city, but it's a hip city, so they'll want to set things in it. And if you film it in Vancouver,
essentially the same environmental conditions as Vancouver.
So you can very much mimic that. So they'll set things in Seattle, and they'll constantly torment us. The worst one, the one that drove me the most nuts, was that weird Cary Elwes movie, The Crush. With
never saw it.
It's a stupid movie, but I think I told you about it in a previous podcast. But there was one scene at the very beginning when they're establishing this is a Seattle movie. So they show this guy driving into Seattle. He's a reporter to go to work for this high powered investigative magazine. Yeah, based in Seattle. So anyway, they're showing him in his convertible and he's looking at his map of the state of Washington in case we don't get that it's in Seattle. Then the camera pans up briefly on the bridge as he's going into Seattle and you see a...
Where's he driving from?
Who knows? L.A. or somewhere. So the camera pans up and for a split second, just a split second, you see that restaurant, that revolving restaurant that the top looks mildly like the Space Needle. And then the camera cuts off. And I realized right then and there that, wow, I think that they did that specifically. They thought if we go up here and cut for a second, people are going to think, oh, is that the Space Needle? And then they cut and then they're going to go, it's a Space Needle, except for somebody in Seattle, which will go, that's Vancouver. But anybody else, they might think it was a Space Needle because there was no other reason for that particular shot.
Usually, though, They do.
Pay usually they do an insert.
They pay for the stock Seattle footage.
And they didn't do in this movie. They literally didn't do it. They didn't even bother to have the courtesy to pay for some stock Seattle footage or send a camera crew down for a half an hour to shoot some scenes. They did none of that.
I think one of the poster boys for this is what I call the Fraser view.
Yeah.
That view out of Fraser's window where it's the view where you see the Space Needle in front of the city, in front of the skyline.
Yep.
And basically there's only one angle you can do it from.
Yep.
And there are no high rise condos.
Well, there's nothing there, but it's basically,
it's the site of Queen Anne.
Yeah. Carrie, it's that park.
There's one public park, Carrie Park.
Yeah. Where everybody, when you get married, including me, you make sure you get your pictures taken there. Well, we went like on our limo, we went around, we got a picture taken in front of a porn studio and a picture taken in front of the troll and from there, because it's the iconic Seattle shot.
You're right, and that's the one angle that you actually see the Space Needle in front of the skyline, because people don't realize the Space Needle's actually like 2 miles outside of the downtown
area. It's in a place called Seattle Center, which ironically is nowhere near the center of Seattle.
Anyway, and so it's, you know, you're looking at that view out of Fraser's window.
Yep.
You're like, well, there are some apartment buildings that probably have that view, but Fraser's not living there because they're like 4 or 5 stories.
Yeah.
And they look more like student apartments almost.
And there's houses there too.
Yeah. Queen Anne is one of the expensive neighborhoods of Seattle.
Yep.
Anyway, it's just, and I remember driving around. Because I didn't grow up here and I didn't know about that park, trying to find the view. Like some friends and I late one night, let's go try and find that view.
Yep.
And we couldn't find it. We were on Queen Anne.
Because you got to take one road and then take a little side back road it is.
I think it's on Highland.
Yeah.
So if you're going up Queen Anne Boulevard up the hill, you got to make a left on Highland. And we didn't make that left. And so we drove around for like an hour and couldn't find it. And we're like, it's a helicopter shot. It's bull. And then actually I saw an Evening Magazine promo once with John Curley.
Yeah.
Where they're shooting him at the park making a promo, and he says, "We're here at Carrie Park." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I wrote that down, found it on the map, and I was like, "Oh, it's not like a hit. It's not like nobody knows about it."
Speaking of Evening Magazine, when I remember 20 years ago, I used to watch that regularly. Well, anyway, I happened to turn on the other day because I realized they're filming it and putting it on HD, and it looks great. I mean, they have some producers on that show that really, the stories are dumb, but they're well shot and really well put together. I was like, wow, I got to watch this again, especially on HD. The show looks gorgeous. Even if it's eye candy, it looks gorgeous.
Well, you wonder if they know, because one of the things you hear from people who have HD TVs is, especially when you first get it, you will watch anything if it's in HD. Anything, you'll watch, the Discovery Channel documentary about grass growing.
UFC. I sit through a bunch of UFC champions, and it's people beating the crap out of each other, but it's so clear you're gone.
And so maybe there's somebody who knows that saying, you know what, we can get some ratings bump.
Yeah.
No matter how small, if we use this equipment we already have, because our news division shoots in HD.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We can take advantage of that compulsion to watch anything.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Actually, they have talented people working for it. That's undeniable.
That steers me back towards the bitching about Best Buy and Circuit City and how everything's complicated. One of the things I really wanted to see with my friend's TV was a standard definition signal.
Oh, yeah.
Because you go to Best Buy, you go to Circuit City, they're running their HD loop. Or maybe they have a specific HD DVD or Blu-ray sample, but they're not playing a standard definition cable or satellite signal, which obviously they want to sell the TV. They're going to show you the best possible image, which is not standard def. But one of the key differences between HD TVs is how the signal processing works. And so what one $2,000 TV does with a regular signal versus another $2,000 TV can vary widely.
Yeah.
And I would think it's very important to see before you buy it.
People know what they're doing.
Right.
People that don't, like, oh, this is great, I want, and then don't realize later, wow, I got the simple, jaggiest, worst, ugliest signal.
And so I'm glad that my friend did this, because a lot of what I was doing last night was checking out how it processed standard signals.
Do they squeeze the signal? Do they put black bars on the sides? How do they deal with the 4-3?
Well, you can either let the cable box do stuff with it or let the TV do stuff with it.
Yep.
I can't remember what my friend was choosing, but he was basically doing black bars on the side.
Cause you know, it's weird. My mom has she's got I think it's an LCD. I'm not sure what it is, but she's got a high def screen that is really a nice looking thing, but the only signal they get is standard. But it's the widescreen, and I don't know what it is, but it's not squeezing the picture, but well, it looks good.
You can do various things with it. You can just take what's there and horizontally stretch it so everything's a little squashed.
Which always looks bad.
You can zoom in so that the black bars go away, but then you end up cropping top and bottom.
You can do a combination. Hers, I think, must be some weird mild combination because it doesn't look
that bad.
You can
also do a thing where it stretches the edges but leaves the center alone, which I don't like. Huh. And there's a couple different reasons for that because, like, John's HDTV, which is a little bit older, he cannot do – because his will show a 4:3 standard def image with gray bars on the side. But the manual says he can't do that for more than 15% of his viewing time or they'll start to burn in.
Well, that's what they've always
said
about.
Why they did gray instead of black, I don't know.
Well, supposedly gray, because black is an actual image. That supposedly gray was the best choice for that. I remember reading something. But does he have a plasma?
He has a rear projection, but it's a CRT rear projection.
But anyway, so I've heard that with – I haven't heard that with CRTs. I've heard that with –
Well, it's
my monitor. I've screwed up my actual computer monitor.
He doesn't have a standard CRT tube. It's a CRT projection, which is
different. But it's based on that technology.
I just want to make sure the listeners know that I'm not being an idiot. And beyond that, there are also things where, like, he was really looking at a plasma because his wife wanted the form factor.
Yep.
But plasma has a number of issues.
Oh, your other friend.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about John.
No, Randy.
It's kind of, wow, John's married.
But
good for him.
But plasma... the plasma has a number of conditioning things that, like, supposedly the burn-in issue is solved now.
Really?
Well, that's what they say, that you don't have to worry about it with plasmas anymore. But
invariably they say that because the standard person, the way they watch it, and then I think of my dad who just leaves the TV on for 7 days a week straight, I guarantee you he would have a burn-in.
Well, there's a couple different things to mention. One is that you're still supposed to condition the plasma by watching things without static images. Mm-hmm. So you're really not supposed to play video games on a plasma at all for the first 1,000 hours. That's
what,
like, half
hell?
A year. For standard, I think 2,000 hours is the yearly average.
Oh, my.
And after
God.
That, it's only supposed to be 10%.
Well, screw that. I'll never get
exactly.
a plasma ever.
It's retarded. Another friend just set up needed a plasma for work purposes, and they set one up in this demonstration center. There was a power failure, and when this thing came back on, it reset to its factory defaults, mm-hmm. and plasmas have this pixel jiggle thing, where it's like an imperceptible pixel shift that keeps things from burning in. Well, it reset to not be on. And with 1 day of a flash presentation having a bit of a static text box, it burned in.
Ugh.
And they tried all this stuff of conditioning and doing a random image thing of stuff that's supposed to fix burn in. It didn't work. And this is like within the past 3 months. So it's not like it's an old plasma. And
what
he
a piece
is
of crap.
Pissed.
My dad.
He does any opportunity to say, don't do plasma. They're garbage because of this one experience. And
you know,
can't blame him.
My brother bought my mom's, it's a rear projection, but I think it's a CRT technology. And it had a beautiful screen. They got it, but my mom and Bud would sit there and her husband would watch, the stock programs like Bloomberg TV the whole time.
Oh no.
And I don't know why my brother even bought this. I mean, does he not notice that the bottom of the screen has this blue and white text burned right into the thing? It's just ruined, you know, and it just looks terrible, terrible. So I don't know. Anyway, so, you know, I have my video projector here and
it's not high def, but
it's close. It's basically it's XGA or
I can't keep.
Well, it's whatever. It's 1024 by 768 or whatever.
Okay.
So it's pretty close. But anyway, it just looks great. And I find myself watching a lot more TV now that I have the whole thing set up, which is probably a good thing.
Okay.
So, anyway,
there was no new email this week to our email address, which is youguysrock@mustardayonnaise.com. I have yet to send out the email to my friends.
You should.
Family.
It's a funny email, man.
Well, I had to send out the wedding pictures email. I didn't want people to deal with two big spam emails for me in 1 week. And I don't know. It's still, you're putting yourself out there, and suddenly there's a difference between people you hardly know.
But it's funny. You should Give a little, send it out so I can send it out. Yeah. I'm not going to send it out without you.
Anyway, as I bring that up for no reason whatsoever. Yeah, and sorry, I have to.
Bless you with the healing powers of the almighty Satan.
Maybe cut that out.
Why? It's not dirty.
Richard's got this whole Satan fixation.
I used to have one.
You really do. You do the bless you with the Satan thing. Yep. You do that a lot. Yep. And you've done that for as long as I've known you.
Yes.
You've shown me your old Sears name tag where it says Beelzebub, which I grant that's hysterical.
Not just that. Courtesy award winner, because I was the quarterly courtesy award winner for the entire store, but I didn't have that much of an opportunity to go out and actually do stuff, so I didn't really need to wear my name tag. So I felt compelled to wear the Beelzebub
when you remodeled your house and stripped the siding off.
Yes.
And put your Tyvek style house wrap.
Yeah, my buddy
spray painted.
Wasn't spray painted, it was put on with red Tyvek type or Tyvek tape 666 on the wall. That one in particular,
which was then covered up by the siding. Yes. So it's just sitting there. So whoever
40 years from now pulls the siding off is in for a surprise. That one in particular is the one that goes, man, if there is a God, I'm really screwed. That one screwed me. The other ones, it's no big deal for some reason, but that one I'm going, wow, I have the mark of Satan on the side of my house.
Whatever. All right. So we're done.
We are. We end with Satan, which is always a good thing. You know, the Tenacious D movies.
That's
the
Richard's
Tenacious
opinion.
D movies coming up, and Satan is a major character in that movie. So I'm looking forward to that.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm going to hell.
I'm Matt, and he's Rich. Well, I'm Matt.
And I'm Richard.
Yeah. We're done. Bye.